Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode 117, for those who are counting. I need to thank three more Patreon subscribers this week. My dear friend Stephanie Alia, my sister Molly Rudberg-Leschnock, and my brother Aaron Rudberg. Without these supporters, this podcast would have a very hard time being successful. So thank you to all three of you for considering it worth supporting. For those of you who still want to support, I do have a $3 a month, $5 a month, or $10 a month level. With each level, you get assorted goodies and other cool stuff, an email each month, a shout out on social media. There's all sorts of delicious stuff ready and waiting to be a part of your life if you decide to support the pod. This week, my guest tells quite a few stories, and there's a little bit of everything in this episode. There's a little bit of a ghost story, a story about ESP, and then, of course, my favorite, a story about a UFO. I've known Allie Young for about 30 years. We went to school together, and I first met Allie at University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana. We lost touch over the years, but one of my avid listeners, my dear friend Amy, reached out and she said, "You know who you should interview? Allie." Even though it had been 30 years, Allie said, "Absolutely." And so here we are. So now, episode 117 of Bite-Sized Blessings. So my mother had gotten me a puppet. And this puppet was an artifact from when the Christian missionaries went to China in like the 1800s and would do their little puppet shows. And so it was like a kitschy thing, and she'd gotten me that. So the next day, Ethel, you know, like I'm like holding her, and then I look and I'm like, oh, that puppet. Today, I would very easily say that I'm an acupuncturist. I mean, I put in all the hours, I did all the work, I got the degrees. You know, I think other people would say she's witchy. And I've definitely heard that. But I'm really just, I'm a searcher. Like, I'm here for the experiences, right? Some people have built a life like around family or jobs or this and that and the other. I'm just a collector of experiences, which is why I know Amy was like, "You got to talk to her," because I just done a lot of funny stuff. I've had a lot of funny experiences. So, yeah.
So you and I, we knew each other in college. And even though we weren't the same year, we knew each other. And I asked you the question before, but I'm going to ask it again. You know, in college, what did you think you were going to be? Like, how did you end up becoming an acupuncturist?
Oh, gee. Okay. In college, I wanted to be in advertising, or, you know, like I wanted to do commercials and jingles. And I did that in my life, right? And another thing that I did is I wanted to be a songwriter, but I didn't realize that songwriting was a thing until I was 30. Like, I didn't know the industry, right? I just was the girl with the guitar, like always making the songs, you know, too afraid to be on stage, like stage fright. That was a killer. But I will say this. So I always had these like wanted to do all these creative things. This is just the funniest part about it to me. I vividly remember going to see a palm reader in my 20s. I had a palmist in my 30s. I had a geodish in my 30s. I still have the same geodish. I have had seers. And I'm talking about the best. Like, I don't know how lucky I was. Like, I've been around really magical people. And when I tell you that so many times in my life, these people said,
you're going to be in medicine. You are healthcare. You were born under the star Ashvini. Ashvini was the, you know, the doctors to the gods. And yes, there's music around all of these things too, but this is your thing. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, no, just when am I going to write a hit song? You know? But all of these other things that I thought, you know, I wasn't getting the messages. So I just, this is another funny way I come into acupuncture. I was going through a divorce. I had put aside all of my own things that I wanted to do with my life, you know, for the husband, thinking I would get pregnant. And so I didn't want to like stay in a TV career and be like career, you know, so I got into real estate, and then all of these health things came up, where it was like, I wasn't getting it. There was infertility and lots of other things. And I started using acupuncture a lot for my own health. And I had all of these amazing shifts in my health that were, I mean, I had a pituitary tumor, right? And the Western medicine for it is this medicine called bromocriptine. And they don't tell you this, but it can make you dissociative. And it did. And I discovered I was dissociative when I was driving on a highway and I missed my exit. And my husband at the time, Kevin Sussman, looks at me and he's like, you're missing your exit. And I just turned, and this is LA on the 5. And I just like turned, la, 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 hit the ramp because I had missed the exit, but there's like the berm, hit the berm, went up like Dukes of Hazzard, came down, the car skittered on the corner, and like I'm like this like race car driver, and he's like white knuckling it, you know, like, what is going on? What are you doing? And I was as calm as, you know, like, and I looked at him and I had zero adrenaline in me. I looked at him, I said, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. So stopped the bromocriptine and decided to use Chinese medicine and herbs, and was just going and getting MRIs every 6 months. And now that prolactinoma is the kind of tumor that it is like so small, it does nothing. I check on it sometimes. And then of course, when I went into the doctor and I was like, okay, and he was like, okay, it's gone, you know, it's going away, it's shrank, and this and that. And he's like, so you don't have to take the medicine anymore. I was like, I haven't been taking the medicine. I've been doing acupuncture and these other things. And he was like, oh, that's probably not why it went away. You know, he was like, it's probably was going to do it on, you know, so I'm getting all those sorts of messages. So I'm going through this divorce and I don't have children and I'm 40. And I was like, I can do whatever the hell I want. I can do like whatever I want to do in my life. I'm sorry if I should I not say hell? I'm swearing on a podcast. So I just had this realization that I could do anything that I wanted and that I needed to live a life of purpose, that the rest of this life, you know, I had no guarantee that I would ever have children. And so that to be my purpose was going away. I had, you know, no guarantee I'd meet another partner. You know, I was like, if I'm alone in this world and I have to create myself, what do I want to do? And I had been doing a lot of meditation. I'd been involved. I went to Insight in 2010. So this is like, so now I'm like meditating for a couple years and I'm having total breakdown. Like I'm a mess at this time, but I did allow myself this moment to type into Google. What are the top growing jobs in the United States? And I just said to myself, I'm going to really sit and meditate on each one of these entries. And it was a list of the top 100. And when I tell you, and I was just like so clear, like I would like read it and like envision like, what is this path? What am I doing? And acupuncture was 68. And when I got there, I was just like, hold the door. That's what I'm going to do. And then I didn't think I'd be able to put needles in people. And I went to like, you know, a college and I went and I talked to them and I was like, I don't know, I'm really called to this. And like finally all of the words of my Jyotish and every reader who'd ever like see me and said, like, was in my head, like, you will be. And it finally became like, oh, this is a type of medicine I can do. This is something I believe in. And I really like, this is a, I feel my purpose could be here, but I was like, but I don't think I can put a needle in a person. I just really don't think I can. And they looked at me and they're like, well, you don't have to use any needles until, you know, the end of year two. And Chinese medicine is a very whole medicine. You're going to be learning herbs, you're going to be learning qigong, you're going to be learning meditation, you're going to be learning, you know, dietary things. So you don't have to have a career in Chinese medicine and be an acupuncturist, you know. And I was like, okay, then I'll do it. And now I'm doing it and I love it. And I'm like, I can't, it's the duck to water thing, you know, where I love what I do every day, every single day.
Kudos to you for clearing out your tumor base, you know, with what you used, your modalities, herbs and acupuncture, because I think the default is you go to a Western trained doctor and they know everything. But in reality, it's, you know, what I've discovered for myself is it's going to take a bunch of different practitioners to create a cohesive whole for me as far as becoming well. It's not just one practitioner. It's you get answers wherever you can, because sometimes the things that happen with our bodies are mysterious, and it's good to, you know, ask a lot of different people what they think. That's worked for me anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful.
And I'll tell you, it wasn't like I was like, cure my pituitary tumor. It wasn't that. It was just a part of healing myself in general from the infertility and just being healthy. You know, I didn't have any hope. I didn't have that conversation. Like, I want you to help me with, you know what I'm saying? And that's the other thing about Chinese medicine is it's not about the disease. We're not treating the disease. We're treating the human. It's holistic.
Yeah. And I think it's also another good reminder to listen to those still voices in our heads that tell us things. Take their advice when you need to.
Yeah. And it's really important to know, like, when the most important thing I do in my job is knowing when to say, no, you really have to go see a doctor. Like, you have to see an endocrinologist. I'm not comfortable treating you until we have some of these diagnostics done, et cetera. You know, the best care isn't, I'm not like a, you know, woo-woo doctor. Gotta know what your lane is. It's just like, too often in our culture, people don't understand that, hey, this is a lane and it's a safe lane, you know, and it can be very effective and profound in that way.
Well, I'm glad you lived through that crazy accident.
Yeah.
In a religious household, like, what did that look like for you as a kid? Just did you go to church? How did you evolve with it or out of it? What did that look like in your life? What does that look like in your life, I guess?
Yeah, so my family is from the Brethren, you know, Brethren like Mennonite, the Effort of Cloisters. My mom wasn't very religious, but she did go to DePaul and got her degree in philosophies of world religions. And so, and she grew up in Brooklyn. And so she was around a lot of Jewish people and a lot of different cultures. So, you know, I definitely grew up in a very broad-minded sort of and liberal, progressive, communist, sort of household. So in Evanston, Illinois, you know, like a think tank liberal sort of town. When we moved to Chicago, I went to Moody Church Bible Institute. I went to St. John Birchman. I went to St. Clements. And then I got into the public school system. I was exposed, you know, then to Catholicism in a really big way. And then, you know, going home, it's like to the very, you know, Anabaptist Protestant, like home, where it's like, don't believe any any of that jazz they're telling you. so lots of exposure to lots of different sort of religious beliefs and being open to it all, you know? I mean, and my mom really allowed me to investigate for myself. But I will say that my household, yes, we would Christmas time get invited to a mass in some church, something like that. But we didn't, there were no strict sort of go to church things, because also in like the Brethren faith, it's like, it's really more about community. If you go into like a Mennonite church, there's no idols. There's no, you know, it's so that idea of having faith and needing to be like in a church wasn't aligned for me. Yeah. I think there was just like kind of this ethical moral thing. Like I was very aware that we were Christian, you know, very aware of that. But I mean, I did witchy things with my Bible. So I think I told you, I had a gorgeous, and until recently, Bible that was from Jerusalem. And it was like such a beautiful artifact. And the outside is made of like olive tree wood. And it was gold, like everything about it, like sensory wise, was just like this beautiful, like the very thin, leafy, and beautiful illustrations. And if I felt really lost, because my grandma was like, it was very much pray every night, you know, sort of thing. So, you know, I was like, if I need to know something, I'll just ask the Bible and I'll just open up to a page and read what the Bible says. So I was like using it as like a divining, like an oracle, not like a Bible. Terrible.
You're my first kind of, I don't know if you're recovering Mennonite, but you're my first Mennonite.
I'm not. It's just, and I never really practice it. It's just like when I do go home to my mom, we go to the Mennonite church. My ex-husband is Jewish. And the joke that he told me when we started dating, I was like, you know, this can't go anywhere. Your mom's never going to accept me. And he was like, no. My mom's already gone through this. My older brother married an Italian Catholic and he converted to Italian. That was a joke. So I was married and I, you know, we came home for Christmas and I was like, oh, you know, come to church. And he's like, I don't know if I'll feel comfortable, you know, it's a Christian church. And I'm like, no, we're so inclusive. And there's no Jesuses on the wall. It almost feels like, you know, like you'll be in your own temple because there's no iconography. And he was like, okay. And we got in there and the whole sermon was about supporting the people in Palestine who sat there shaking his head. I am so sorry. I was like, of all the times, and I'm like, you realize it's not like they're anti-Israel, it's just these are farmers. The Mennonites and Amish are farmers and they just care about farmers not being able to get to their farm. It was terrible.
I do want to say that I'm sorry about your divorce. I mean, I know you're in an amazing place now, but that kind of heartbreak and that kind of loss, it's huge. So I'm sorry. I just want to acknowledge it.
Oh, thank you for acknowledging. But I also have to say, like, man, it is such an opportunity when you can get out of something and like just rebound and transform and become even more authentic. I would never have found this level of purpose in my life if it ended up being an opportunity. And of course, when you're deep in the sadness, you can't see that necessarily, but you just keep one foot in front of the other, doing the work. I think apropos of what I do now, the most recent ghost story that I have is I was in school and one day my teacher, first of all, if for people who don't know, the Chinese culture is very superstitious, right? They have ghost month, you know, where you burn paper money for your ancestors. And if you feel a tap on your shoulder, you do not turn around because the spirit will get in, right? And even in the medicine, the lung spirit, the grief spirit, is the Po spirit. And that's the spirit that stays with the planet, right? So, you know, if you're, you know, driving by a place where a lot of people have died or something, right? You get the chill. And you might not even know, like, that's the dead man's turn or whatever. But there's just this thing where sometimes you'll be, you get the bristle. And, you know, that's like the Po spirit wants to get in because it's the earth, it's earthbound spirits, right? Related to grief and lung. So Dr. Chang was talking about, who's a feng shui master, was talking about clearing ghosts and stuff. And I was like, okay, well, I think I have a ghost. And sure enough, she confirmed I did. So first of all, ghosts don't, like, I'm not like afraid. I'm not like, ooh, ghosts everywhere. But I am very aware that we live in a world that is populated with lots of spiritual entities. And maybe it's just energies, right? You can call it whatever you want. So one day I'm laying down and I'm asleep. And my dog, who always slept restfully with me and never did anything like this, I woke up in the middle of the night. She'd walked to the other side of the room, crawled up on top of something, and was in a guarding mode and was barking at me in the middle of the night. And I was like, Ethel, what's wrong? What are you doing? I got up. I was like, oh, you demented little dog. What a weird thing for you to do. And I grabbed her and I put her back in bed. Well, the next day, so my mother had gotten me a puppet. And this puppet was an artifact from when the Christian missionaries went to China in like the 1800s and would do their little puppet shows. And so she, it was like a kitschy thing, and she'd gotten me that. So the next day, Ethel, you know, like, I'm like holding her, and then I look and I'm like, oh, that puppet, you know, like, I just had this thing. It was like looking at me, and I was looking at it, and I was like, all right, exactly. So at the time I was, but I was like, no, I'm just being weird, right? You go to that. I'm just being weird. This is my weirdness just coming out. So I'm in my divorce and I'm dating, and I have a gentleman caller, and he's a normal person without any sort of, like, you know, belief in ghosts and stuff. And in the middle of the night, I sense him just wake up, and he takes his hands from his head to his torso, and he just goes and like just sweeps his body with his hands. And I wake up, and I'm like, what's going on? And he's just sweeping his body, and he's like, oh my God, there was a woman laying on my chest, and she was suffocating me. And he's like, this is so crazy. And I'm like, he's like, I swear she was here. It's so, he's like, what's going on? What did you give me? What was in my food? What did I drink? Like, all this stuff. And like, and my dog Apple's like looking, and I'm like, all right. So I tell this to Dr. Chang, and she's like, you got to get rid of that puppet.
Never bring the historical puppet home. Like, never.
No.
Dolls and puppets, leave them on the garage sale table or wherever you find. Never bring those things home. It's haunting a pile of garbage right now. I hope it's happy.
Totally.
Oh my God.
Some banana peel.
It's haunting a banana peel.
In the LA landfill.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay. That's such a creepy story. And I'm sure if I was your date, I would have been a little freaked out as well.
Oh my God. And it, you know, and the thing is, if he hadn't been like one of those super reasonable people who like otherwise would have been hearing this and discarding it completely as some fabrication or fantasy, like, I wouldn't have taken it so seriously. But the fact that someone who was completely reasonable was like, I had this. And I was like, all right, so now I got to pay attention. Because I generally just don't, you know, I don't allow myself to be haunted. Just don't take it. I want to tell you my UFO story, because you're in Santa Fe. which is where it happened. One afternoon, it's just gorgeous. And my friend Emily and Arlo are, and this is like a Thursday or Wednesday, they're like, let's just go watch the sunset. And I think Arlo is like looking at some land just north of Santa Fe, not quite Pauake, like along the highway, you know, just like randomly over there. So we climb up to the top of a mesa and we're looking out toward the Jemez Mountains, right? Across the valley. And we hear an airplane and we look up and we're really curious because we hear it, but there's no chemtrail or anything. But we just see, oh, it's a plane. And now we're having a conversation about how, wow, it's so clear. It was just like clear blue, not an afternoon, you know, when the clouds roll in and you get all of this stuff. It was like eerily, it was like a blue ball all over us and no chemtrails and nothing. And we're looking out across and talking and smoking cigarettes, I promise, just cigarettes. Because that's what makes this story really interesting for the three of us. We're like, what? And we see a silver ball, like kind of drop out what looks like out of the atmosphere and like pretty much over the mountains, like far away, like over the mountains. And it's just like a little ball, right? And now we're going, oh, well, there's the weather balloon. So there must be some weather coming, right? But it drops and it's just there. It's not moving right or left. It's not, you know, like, and but maybe it could. And so now we're taking note of it. It seems to be just hovering. And we're like, oh, that's weird. And then it sucks back up into the atmosphere. And we're like, oh, okay. So the atmosphere river just took it away somewhere. Oh, weather balloons are so funny. And boom, it appeared, and we're talking, and it comes down again. And this time it goes back and then 45 degrees up, like traces a triangle, goes in these sharp angles. And now we're going, wait, that is not a weather balloon. And now we're going, what kind of airplane could make that sharp an angle? Like now we're just having this discussion about like, what are we seeing? This doesn't make, and you know, since, you know, Los Alamos is right there and the lab's there and it's New Mexico, I'm like, our government has some really powerful technology that we don't know about. And isn't this crazy that we get to see it? Because this doesn't make any sense. And it's doing these crazy things. And so, and then boop, it sucks back up into the atmosphere. But we're really weirded out because we're like, what kind of technology does our government have? And then I'm telling you, I said, you guys, if that was an alien, it would definitely make itself known to us because it knows that I'm open. And when I tell you it came, dropped out of the sky and now halfway into the valley and like hovered there, we could see it's like this big silver ball and we just booked it. We were just like, go, go, run. What is happening? Like we just had no idea. And to this day, like, you know, I'll see Arlo. I'll be like, what did we see? Like, what was that? Because it defies everything that makes sense.
I love that story. Thank you. I'm so envious. Actually, quite a few of my guests, not quite a few, maybe four or five have seen UFOs. So I've heard other UFO stories, but
And it's that thing where you just don't like, I mean, maybe we do have this, who knows what we saw, but if, to the extent that it cannot be explained by anything that we reasonably know that could move in that way. Yeah. It's just mind blowing.
You know, particularly in light of what's come out in the news in the last few years with what those Navy pilots filmed.
The Foo Fighters.
Yeah, from their planes. So I think it's interesting that you have had a similar experience. I love it. I love it. I'm so jealous. Yeah.
So then after that timeline in my life, this is neither ghost or UFO. This fits into that extrasensory perception category. I moved to New York at the end of August in 2001. And because I was going to take my career to the next level and go all in on TV and film. And I was at the time estranged from my mother. I didn't really talk to her. She'd moved to Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I'd never visited her there. So on September 10th, I took a nap, which is also something I never do. I don't know how to nap. It was a beautiful day. And I just felt like such a heaviness. I fell asleep. And I woke up like in a fever dream, in one of the dreams you can't get out of. And I was so like gripped with fear. And this does not happen to me. This isn't like, oh, I have nightmares and stuff. And I'm sweating. And the dream that I can't get out of is like the universe. It's like all of the stars. And they're just kind of like dancing above me. And then they turn into this like, you know, galaxy game board. And on one side is like one ship. And then on the other side, it's like a skull, 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 a skull. And I'm like, stop, 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 stop. And the skulls don't stop. And so I get up and I'm just like, I just don't feel right. I got in my car and just headed toward Pennsylvania. This is, you know, before you have like phones that you can like use. And, or I had a flip phone or something, but I just got in my car in this weird, like fever state. When I got to New Jersey, I called my mom and I said, Mom, I'm on my way to visit you. And she was like, why? And I was like, I don't know. I feel so strange. I don't know why I'm coming to visit you. And I still think, and I stopped and I had like this meal at this restaurant that was family owned and like had this, like it's all so dreamlike to me. And my mom tells me how to get to her place, and I get there and I get to her door, and she just looks at me and she's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, I don't know. I just need to lay down. And I went back to bed at 8 o'clock and woke up to my mom shaking me, TV on. You can't believe it. I can't believe you're here. And I'm like, what? And I look at the TV, and then we saw the second plane hit. And I was like, what? Like, wow, how did I get out of the city? And now I'm trapped with my mother. This is awful. No, I'm terrible. I love my mother. We're very strange, but it's to say that like to this day, I have never felt more compelled to run and escape ever.
I have a story about September 11th. I had bought a house the year before in Portland, and I bought the house like in August or September, and the weather came in and it got really cold really fast. So I couldn't do all the painting and some of the improvements I wanted to do. But I was super excited about it. And I spent that winter and spring like making a list. And I was like, I'm just going to get on this and dial everything in. I have unending energy and I'm just so excited. And starting about July, I just had this intense feeling of just heaviness come on me and like a sorrow. And as the months like progressed, and I got nothing done. I didn't do any painting. I didn't do any improvements. I was just like, what's the point? And I just had this heaviness and it just got worse and worse and worse. And the guy I was dating at the time, at the end of August, he was like, what's wrong with you? And he said, I don't know, but something's coming and it's bad and I can't stop it. Mm-hmm. And he said, like what? And I said, I don't know. I can't. I know something's happening and I can't stop it. And he just was like, I don't know if he thought I was crazy or what, but then September 11th happened. And a week later I was painting my bedroom and I was like whistling. And of course I went through September 11th and it was horrific, but after the event, I all of a sudden had this new life, new energy to do projects. And I stopped myself in the middle of painting the wall and I thought, oh my gosh, what I was waiting for happened. Mm. And so now I can move on. I just had this such a visceral sense of this is what I'd been waiting for the whole time. Mm. And it's horrific and is still horrific. And I can't even imagine any part of that day without feeling completely sad and very depressed. But it was almost like that event was like this massive boulder that was dropped into space and time, because mm-hmm. just the psychic energy that was unleashed mm-hmm. by everyone worldwide was so mm-hmm. massive. Mm-hmm. It was so massive, the grief, the horror, the sorrow, that mm-hmm. it created these ripples, almost like these psychic ripples. This is how I think of it. Mm-hmm. Psychic emotional ripples that went back in time, that traveled back in time. Mm. And that's what I was feeling, you know, that the horror, the sorrow, the grief. I was feeling that, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, I absolutely, you know, that's a part of what is acknowledged in what I practice to this day. Extrasensory perception is something that's very much acknowledged in the medicine that I practice.
But with how sensitive you are, I'm not surprised that you had this dream, you know, this intuition about September 11th. You're such an interesting human. I have to say, I love it.
I mean, and it's not just that, you know, I've missed everywhere that I've lived. I've missed any like big event by one day, like left town, like the big Los Alamos fires. So the joke among my friends has been for years, like, you tell me when you get that inkling, like, you gotta move. I'm the first one you call, you know, the blackout in New York. I'm always like, how am I missing all this? Like, this is where I live and I'm missing all this stuff. Yeah.
For listening to this episode of the podcast. I need to thank my guest, Allie Young, for sharing all of her stories, even though I found one or two of them a little scary. And I need to thank the creators of the music used for this episode. Music L Files, That Sounds, Frank Schroeder, Alexander Nakarada, and Otis Galloway. For complete attribution, please see the Bite Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, you'll find links to music, books, playlists, and artists I think will lighten and brighten your day. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Allie. Don't be scared. Even though you might have these things happen to you or happen around you, events that are inexplicable, know that they're all part of the greater mystery, just like you are. You're part of the greater mystery too. Know that they're part of the greater mystery and that this world is enchanted. We can still be enthralled and excited with what this world has to offer.